This is Stephanie Wells.
Thank you for listening to the Just Completed program. If you'd like to offer feedback on any of our programming, please email us at info@wpfw.org.
Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I didn't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no. What I do?
Turn around. Put your hands behind your back. Let's go. Let's go.
The jury of your peers having found you guilty. 10 years.
Come on. Get that set.
I was in jail, too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to Crossroads. We come to you every Tuesday at the same time.
Roach, I don't hear you.
Okay, how's that? Is
much
that
better.
It?
Yep, you're
okay.
Back.
All right. Well, we're having a little technical problem. We're over here at Ben's Chili Bowl on 10th and H Street Northwest. Ben's is
Northeast,
I'm sorry. Ben's is closed for remodeling. So we decided to do a rotating show once a month. We'll come to a different Ben's Chili Bowl to bring you the latest news on what's happening for those impacted by the criminal justice system. We always start off with what we call the grapevine. Mike is not with us, our engineer, but we got a new man, Rob. Thank you, Rob, for what you're doing. I know at the last minute, pulling all this together is quite a task. So here we go. We open up with what we call the grapevine, information that you can use, the grapevine. Trump orders pushes forcible hospitalization of homeless people. Trump's executive order could increase hospitalization of homeless individuals with mental health and substance use disorders. President Donald Trump has directed federal agencies to find ways to make it easier to forcibly hospitalize homeless people with mental illnesses and addiction for longer periods, an effort to fight what the administration calls vagrancy threatening the streets of U.S. cities. An executive order signed Thursday pushes federal agencies to overturn state and federal legal precedent that limits how local and state governments can involuntarily commit people who pose a risk to themselves or others. The order said shifting homeless people into long-term institutionalized settings will restore public order. Surrendering our cities and citizens to disorder and fear is neither compassionate to the homeless nor citizens. The impact of Trump's executive order remains unclear because states set laws and handle the process of involuntary commitments. Critics warn that such a policy threatens returning the nation to a darker era wherein people were often unjustly locked away in mental health institutions. It does nothing to help people afford housing. The problem with screening mail in prisons. New York controversy over scanning mail in prisons reflect a national debate involving security and privacy. These moves have ignited controversy and reflects a long-running debate in prison systems across the country between the need for security measures and respect for incarcerated people's access to mail as a vital avenue to connect with families and legal help. Folks, this stuff is getting scary. Everything we've been bringing to you is just leading to some more darker days. Justice delayed, the growing wait for parole after a life sentence. Nearly half of the roughly 200,000 people serving life sentences in 2024 are eligible for parole, but endure extended delays in the parole process, from the wait for initial eligibility to the wait for reconsideration falling under now. The minimum parole eligibility date is the earliest point at which an incarcerated individual may be considered for parole, minus any time credits earned. Once the required minimum sentence is served, these individuals may re-enter society upon the approval of a paroling authority, most often the parole board. But as this report shows, over the past 50 years, legislators across the country have raised the minimum sentence required for parole eligibility, delaying release of means and significantly transforming the meaning of a life sentence. And lastly, that's been what we call the grapevine, information that you can use. And today we have a two-hour show. The first hour, we'll be talking to Mr. Russell Contreras, contributor writer for Axion. And our topic for the first hour is prison debt is crushing Black women. Good morning, Mr. Russell Contreras. Are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm here. Thanks for having me, sir.
Thank you for calling in. You're calling in from where? Which state are you in?
I'm in New Mexico, right near the Santa Ana Pueblo Indian Reservation and Zia Indian Reservation out here in New Mexico.
Oh, wow. Thank you. We saw your article in Axion about prison debt is crushing Black women. And it struck our fancy that we say, let's see if we can invite you on to discuss this, because we've been suspecting this all along.
Well, we've lost you again.
Say that again. Say that again. Go ahead.
Mr. Contreras, can you hear Roach Brown?
Yes, yes, ma'am. I can hear
you. Yes, yeah, I'm back on, Nakisha. Thank you. And that's right. Joining us, Russell Contreras, is our distinguished co-host, Attorney Nakisha Taifa. Good morning, Nakisha. Where's she? All right, Russell, can you give us a little brief bio of who you are and your little background so our folks know that you're speaking from a position of authority?
Yes, sir. I am the senior race and justice reporter here at Axios. I've been covering issues of criminal justice for many years and other issues around people of color. Before here, I was at the Associated Press. So I've been following issues around criminal justice, discrimination, racial justice for almost 30 years. And it's something I've been doing for a while.
Wow. Well, you sound like the right man that we have on the show. Because when we read your article about prison debt is crushing Black women, as we all know that the majority of, well, about 35 or 40% of the people incarcerated in jails and prisons are Black. And usually the only person that they return to are their mothers, wives, or girlfriends. And these debts that they're incurring because of the man's incarceration has been devastating, to say the least. What struck your fancy to get you to dig into this particular issue is prison debt crushing Black women? How did you come about getting into this this area?
Well, the advocacy group Campaign Zero approached Axios and said, look, we've got data that shows almost all states have at least one category of pay-to-stay fees for incarcerated individuals at the end of last year. So about 47 states. That means when you go into a jail system or prison system, you are immediately handed a bill. You got to pay for your incarceration. Not only that, you got to pay for room and board fees. You also have to pay for medical fees. In addition, if you are a youth incarcerated, going through the system, you also are sent a bill. So what happens is if you go into, say, a city jail or a county jail or a state jail, the state can say, we're going to have fees for your room and board. We're going to raise the fees. And the reason we need to raise the fees, because we got programs we need to fund. DNA programs, or say a library. In each of these cases, there are pressures to fund these programs, but The individual or the residents of that state don't want to pay. They're saying, look, I pay too many taxes. So what do the states do? They say, well, let's raise taxes on the incarcerated people. They've got no advocate. They're not going to protest us at a state legislative hearing. They're too busy. They're incarcerated. So we can raise fees on there. And so what you find over time is these fees add up. And not only can they not pay them because you're incarcerated, you can't work. If you do work, you're paid maybe 50 cents an hour making license plates, that sort of thing. You are then saddled with debt that keeps growing and growing over the years. The longer you're incarcerated, the more debt you get. If you can't pay, well, guess what? That bill goes to your loved ones. Usually, as you mentioned, a black woman, a mother, a girlfriend, a partner, a wife, a sister. That bill comes out, and sometimes the person who has been released is given a bill of $30,000 or more and told, you've got 30 days to pay. If you don't pay, you go back to jail.
Oh, see that? This is what we call a jugger. This is what we call a jugger boogie.
Whoa.
You just said if somebody do 10 or 15 years and they got fines and fees and restitution building, and after you're released for that 10 or 15 years, the only person who's been taking care of you, supporting you, is your wife, mother, girlfriend, or sister, and they've been sending you $1,500 just to make phone calls. After 10 years, you come out and your bill totaled $30,000. You got 30 days to pay it. How in the hell can they expect someone coming out of prison to be locked up for 10, 15 years to pay $30,000? This is what we call what's being done to combat this, to fight this kind of jiggy boogie.
But, you know, the interesting that Campaign Zero said the first step is to let people know it's occurring, that a lot of folks don't know that this has been built up over the years. As many states have passed bills, legislative bills and proposals to lock them up and throw away the key, right? That this is part of that effort, the three strikes rule. When you're incarcerated, the cost of incarcerated people are going up, whether it's the private prison systems, state prison systems, all that costs go up like everything else. And as the state looks around to try to accommodate, get that revenue, the one place they can do is target these individuals. So over time, as it goes on, these individuals have no advocate, right? Nobody's sitting there in legislative hearings or in elections saying, what about those incarcerated? The people that scripture says you're supposed to go visit. What about them? Well, they have no advocate. All of us are locked up in our own concerns about our own paychecks. So thinking of those incarcerated, they're way low down in the priority list. So over the years, this has built up. And not only that, what is striking about this report from Campaign Zero, it's affecting incarcerated youth. Just for example, there are 33 states and D.C. that explicitly allow for room and board fees for incarcerated youth. And 31 states and D.C. explicitly allow for medical fees. So if I have a cold and I'm struggling, I got the flu and I'm a youth, if I go see the prison doctor, they're going to charge me a fee up front before I can visit. If I can't pay, it goes in my debt. If I'm working, the fee is something like you and I could afford, $15 or $40. But if you're making 50 cents an hour and using that money to call home or so forth, that fees are going to add up. So yeah. Even this co-fee is going to really drive you crazy if you get sick. If you get sick, you're saddled with debt.
You know,
Roach, let me just ask a quick question. I understand that there are some states that are fighting back against that. Can you speak to that and how they happen to, to begin to confront some of these laws?
Well, states like California just ended all their fees. So any fee for adults or youth, they said, okay, we're not going to do this. Illinois did that too as well. New York got rid of fees for adults, but still have fees for youth. New Jersey got rid of fees for youth. Virginia, Maryland, and Delaware also got fees for youth. But you've got other places like Florida or Georgia or Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana. Kind of sounds familiar where this is coming from, right? They have their fees, and it looks like they're not getting rid of them. But recently, the state of Missouri changed their law to say, we're not going to explicitly force you to give fees. Now, what that means is local governments or, say, a state prison can still do the fees, but now they're just not required. So groups like Campaign Zero says, okay, that's the first step. making sure that it's not required. Now, you can have the option to get fees. That's fine. Now, what Campaign Zero and advocates want is absolute abolition. No more fees. There are other ways to raise revenue to fund various programs. Because when you fund programs like, say, DNA program, the people that run that program now have an interest to keep that program going. So when you try to get rid of fees, those people say, wait a minute, I need the money. I need you to charge these inmates because you're not going to go dip into other fees. You're not going to go tax suburban folks. You better come up with some revenue. And the state lawmakers do not have the incentive not to change these fees and try and say, go to regular taxpayers, because, you know, who's going to protest? Who's going to advocate? People incarcerated and then the families cannot afford. Many of them working class folks, is working class Black Americans. They can't go to take time off work to go protest or go testify. So these fees keep adding up, and it's hard to get rid of them.
But what happens? These fees compound, and do they accrue interest while they're being compounded?
Yes, sir, they do. Like anything, in when you're incarcerated, you add up cost from telephone calls to, say, any kind of fee that you have to communicate with loved ones. Those add up into an account. You also have accounts that people can give you money so that you can buy things in prison. Toothpaste, for example, or soap. Things that you need for life.
Yes.
In any fees, well, you're also then paid with fees. So you're going in at a loss. So even if you work, you get a job in prison, you're trying to make do. This is not costing if you're trying to get an education now. Some folks say, look, I'm trying to get my life together. I want to get my degree while I'm in jail, or my GED. That's also an added cost. So even if you sit there and you are trying to say, I'm going to improve myself, that's also a bill that gets handed to you.
You know, I read in your article, you mentioned that instead of taxing the public, lawmakers begin extracting money from the people being policed and prosecuted in the forms of fees for public defenders, probation, supervision. So you got to pay to be on probation, electronic house arrest. What the hell's going on? I mean, everything that somebody break the law because they broke trying to get some money, now they're going to jail, and their debt increases 200-400% because of just being arrested.
And that's right. And one of the things that advocates for the fees will say, look, we need restitution. There are victims of crime that need a lot of care. And that can be understood. Victims of crime do need their own resources. If you've been, say, the family of a mother murdered, yes, that person needs some care. But many times, these people are going into the criminal justice system, have committed what we call victimless crimes. They've been caught with narcotics, right? They were trying to hurt themselves. But even when there's no victim of a crime, they are still charged victims of crime fees.
Wow.
Yeah, so if I get arrested for, say, I'm an opiate addict, and they bust me for possession of heroin, and I go to jail, all right? I'm going to the state, you know, because they say the amount I had is a felony. I'm going in, and I have to pay all these court fees as I start to do my sentence. I'm then slapped with the victims of crime fee. Well, I've hurt no one except myself, right? But the state needs you to fund that victims of crime bill. Now, I've not killed anybody. I've not assaulted anybody. I was not involved in a DUI accident and hurt somebody, maimed them. But I'm saddled with this debt all over the place. That has grown, and that interest on those fees keeps growing. And the interest to keep the programs going also creates another aspect of this. With people advocating these folk programs, like, we can't get rid of these fees. I need my program to function.
Go ahead. You said, what do we do, man? This is unbelievable. I mean, it blows my mind that people break the law because they broke trying to get some money, and they go in jail, and their debt increases, and it falls on the Black woman. And most of the Black women, 83% of everybody supporting prison is a woman, particularly a Black woman.
And that's right. And you mentioned earlier on the high percentage of folks in incarcerated are Black Americans, right? So you've got about 40% of those incarcerated in local jails and state prison. We're not even talking about federal prison. Is about 2 out of every 5 people are Black in the prison.
Yes.
System.
Yes.
So when you're handed this bill, that person cannot pay it. It goes to the family members. As you mentioned, it's usually a black woman, a mother, girlfriend, partner. They are in their own self, because sometimes there are children involved. They are trying to survive out there too as well. And usually we're not talking about middle class folks, right? We're not talking about the CEO who is also a Delta. We're talking about a sister who's really struggling in inner city Chicago, or the Mississippi Delta, or out in Third Ward, Houston, Texas. These folks are just trying to survive. And then you add them an extra bill. Then what happens is you cannot provide for the children, the school clothes, the small things, extra fees if you want to participate in athletics. You keep getting behind in the participation of democracy. And without any advocacy for these folks, they keep getting the saddled debt, and it keeps growing. And if they cannot pay, that person who is incarcerated faces the chance of going back in jail.
But not to pay. I read also in your article, you said that those folk who have bills or debt to pay, if they got money for a college education or college fund or retirement fund or whatever, they can access and take all of that money. Is that correct?
That's right. Just like you and I, when we can't pay our taxes, right? And say we get a tax bill, we make a mistake on our 1040, whatever the case is. The federal government can come and start, taking your wages. The same thing can happen for those who are facing fees coming out of incarceration. So think about it. You're doing everything right. You went to school, you run up fees, and then you come out and you're going to get a job. Someone hooked you up with a construction job and you're working. Lo and behold, you find out, where's my paycheck? Well, the state is coming in and taking your paycheck. So now you got no money. So now you got no money to provide for a family. You got no money to eat. What are you going to turn for another economic alternative? Is that the black market, crime, drugs, anything easy that is presenting yourself with an alternative to make money outside of the nose of the federal government, you're going to turn to out of survival. And what happens? You get caught. It gets in the cycle back into, you go back to the criminal justice system, and then your debt grows even more.
This is unbelievable. Why is it this hasn't been publicized or been made known prior to us bringing you on the show? Because this is the first I've heard of it. I know a few states did it, but I didn't know so many states have been charging fees, even for the Supreme Court rule. When you watch TV and you hear the thing about, let me read you your Miranda rights. You got the right to remain silent, and if you don't have an attorney, it won't be appointed to you. Now they're saying you have to pay for a public defender in some states, depending on what's going on.
That's people, right.
Some folks break the law because they are financially overwhelmed with debt. Then they go into prison, and the debt increases 200-300%. How in the hell does somebody ever could get their life together or get back on the right track if we keep being hit with all these? When I was in the federal system, they charge us $2, man, to go on sick call, and $1.50 if they gave you some orange or green aspirin. So you even have to pay for the medication that you receive, in addition to going to pay a $2 or $3 fee to be on sick call. So a lot of folks think that because you go to prison, everything is free. You need money to exist and survive in prison. But these being saddled with these unconscionable, unfair, and unjust fines and fees and restitutions. This is awful. What can be done, Russell? What can be done?
That's a really good question. And we have to, first, before we ask that question, what can we do? We've got to look at ourselves.
Russell, can you hold a minute? We can answer that when we come right back. We're going to take it and throw it to our pitch partner. This is our fund drive here at the station. We are not a commercial station, so we get our funds from our listeners. Mayuki, are you available? We're waiting on our pitch partner. Is she there?
Yeah, I'm here. Well, can you hear me?
Okay, go ahead, Mayuki. Yes.
Yeah, I'm right here.
You're on.
Okay.
You got it.
All right, so this is one of the important reasons why we should support Roach Brown, Crossroads, Martine, and Nikichi, because they bring up the G-Boogie. They bring up information that we may not be aware of that affects us. To understand how, to find this article and bring this gentleman in to talk about how prisons affect women in particular and how detrimental it is in terms of the whole system, how the system is set up to destroy them. please, if you're out there and you're listening and you appreciate that and you understand the value of Crossroads and the show that it, the work that it does, please, please support it. Crossroads is a one-of-a-kind program dedicated to the voices and experiences of returning citizens, those re-entering society after incarceration. And it's just not talk. It's a platform for real change, advocacy, and empowerment. If you appreciate that, if you understand that, if you know that Roach is speaking about this, not as an observer, but someone who's ingrained inside the system and understands how it works, please support it, because this is a platform for this information to be disseminated. The number is 202-588-9739, 1-800-222-9739, or go to the website at wpfwfm.org, or you can use Cash App. Cash App is $WPFWFM, and you can text 801-801 to WPFW to 801-801. However you can do it, please do it. And think about doing it incrementally. Think about doing it on a consistent basis. Perhaps you can do $10 a month or $30 a month or $100 a month and invest in the WPFW and ensure that this platform remains available for everyone. You can become a sustainer and make WPFW your smallest bill. One person at a time, we have a goal of $500. We can get there, but only with your help. We've got a really interesting question that he's got to answer. I want to get right back to it. But to remind you all to please call 202-588-9739.
Thank you, Mayuki. Thank you. We are living in some dangerous times. Russell, we asked you a question, and you started to answer. You want to go ahead and continue, please?
Yes, sir. I think one of the things that we have to remember is that when you're talking about those who are incarcerated and you think of what can be done, we have to pause and look at ourselves. A lot of us look down on people who are incarcerated. We may say on one hand saying, oh, I'm concerned, but everybody, if you are Black, Latino, or Native American, you either have a family member, know someone, or know someone to know someone who's gone through the system. And in those cases, we tend, if we're being honest, we tend to look down. I don't want to be that person, right? We'll go to church, you'll praise the Lord, but you don't listen to what he said. Is like, when you're in prison, you visit me. There's some things that we have to be reflective. And if you look at the recent election, what happened? You know, the Vice President Harris lost, and there was a lot of anger, especially online. If we remember that meme that was going around, that women were looking at a burning city. But if you looked at that photo closely, that meme, these were middle-class women in designer clothes, drinking lattes, as the city below them was burning. Well, who lives in that city? These are poor Black folks. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who are incarcerated. So, you know, we look at it and say, I'm pouting about election. My candidate lost. So the hell with everybody else. Well, who's everybody else? It's this population. They're the ones incarcerated. And I can understand people upset about elections. They say they're tired. But we have to be reflective. Look, Ella Baker never quit. She lost a lot of elections, but she didn't stop. Rosa Parks lost a lot of elections. She didn't stop. You know, Harriet Tubman, you know, brought a lot of people to freedom. She had corns on her feet. You never heard her complain about that. All these women did take a rest. They did play spades on the sides, got their soul back, and they continued on. If we keep spreading these things that, you know, we're tired of the election, it didn't go our way, so the hell with everybody else. The hell with everybody else are people like this paying these fees. This is saddled debt that goes across communities and ends up affecting areas like South Central Los Angeles or Third Ward Houston, right? Or Jackson, Mississippi. That debt is not just with individual families, it's with communities. Those communities can't invest. The cities can't get revenues from those cities to build parks. Because guess what? They're too busy paying debt for their incarcerated loved ones.
Yes,
transcends just individual struggles. It effectively is a community struggle that, unless it's addressed, it's only going to get worse.
Have you seen any egregious situations like where a guy get released after serving time and he owes $10,000, $30,000, and he has a piece of property that he and his wife's name is on the property? Can they seize that property because his name is on it, even though his wife hasn't been incarcerated?
That's a good question. My partner in crime, Delano Massey, did talk to some individuals who did say, look, there are people coming out with $30,000 in debt, right? But to remember, you know, we like to say, well, you know, did you have property? Well, you have to remember, most of these folks don't have property. They're living In many cases, yeah, they're renting. So they're not going to lose a lot of property. So you don't have a lot of cases in it. If there were, that actually could help them because they could sell that property and get in debt. But that's kind of a middle-class mentality of what you and I would do, for example, right? Many of these folks do not have assets. If they're lucky, they may have a car, right? They may have something like that. They may have collected baseball cards as kids. But many times, they don't even have assets when they go into the criminal justice
system. And none when they come out.
And none when they come out. They are worth less than they did when they went in. Even though they did not incur any costs, they weren't buying Jordans. They weren't buying designer clothes. They weren't partying, going to clubs. They were sitting there serving time. The debt accrues not because of anything they were going to get as consumers, getting a new iPhone, for example. They were getting debt by living with room and board and medical, survive.
Mm. Wow. So as of December 24, 48 states allow at least one pay to stay free. So what does that mean? You have to pay to be locked up?
That's right. There's some fee. Every state is different, but they'll save fees. They'll say, hey, we're giving you a bill for bed sheets. We're giving you a bill for the room that you're having here. You have to pay your fees. Now, usually those fees are larger than what you can obtain in wages in prison. For example, in prison, you may get 50 cents an hour or 75 cents. You're not getting a minimum wage. You lose a lot of those rights when you're incarcerated. So it's very difficult for someone to keep up for those fees. For example, if you're getting paid 50 cents an hour, it'll take you, 8 hours to pay a $4 copay to go see a doctor, if that is the low fee. Many times it's $15. So it could take you a whole week to pay that co-fee. So if you're going to pay that co-fee, then you can't even pay the other fees that go on. So to go into prison, and eventually these are germ factories. So these are usually men and women in some cases in close proximity. Humans are going to spread diseases. They're going to spread bacteria. They're going to spread viruses. It's inevitable. That's the way humans work. And then you're going to be having to pay a fee based on human experiences that you cannot control, right? You're not trying to buy extra soap or shampoo. You're not even in that area. You're just trying to pay to survive.
Yeah.
So I have a question. So I know you're saying that this is part of the state and local system. I presume it's not part of the federal system. Do private prisons and the private prison industry come into this or play a role? Can you speak to that?
That's right. You know, depending on the states, whether they require fees or allow fees to happen, the private prisons can do what they want, right? They're like, well, you know, the prison down the street that is state-owned could do it. I need to do it to raise funds too. And by the way, if I do that, I can then contribute to whatever state programs are available. So the private prison systems, they also are beholden to shareholders. They're trying to make a profit. So if they see areas where they can also obtain revenue and other state prisons are doing it, why not, right? It's just basic economy. They're going to do it too as well. So it depends on the state laws, like say Iowa or South Dakota or Indiana. If you are given a green light to do so, you're going to do so. Because again, there are no advocates for those incarcerated. They're not going to be protesting if you do it. The only thing will happen is when you get that bill, you're going to get angry, as you know, you and I do. We're in August summer. A lot of us are getting that utility bill. We're going to get angry, but we usually yelling at ourselves because we've got nobody. We may call the utility company and say, "What's going on here?" If you're incarcerated, or say you're a loved one, you get that bill. There's nobody to yell at. All you can yell up is to the sky.
So there's no redress. There's nothing they can do. Wait a minute, for folk wishing to call in and join this discussion. The phone number is 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893, if you want to call in with a question or a comment to join this discussion. Go ahead, Brother Russell. I mean, you just blown me away, man. I'm sitting there because I know that people go to jail because they're broke trying to get some money. And when you go into jail, you owe twice as much money for committing that crime, getting arrested, convicted. And all of the fees, a lot of folks think you go to prison, everything is free. People, you have to buy your soap, your toothpaste, everything. You even get used underwear. And if you don't have funds or somebody's sending you money, and this is a big part of the black community, 70% or 7 out of every 10 black males have a criminal record or conviction or been stopped by the police, which means that a lot of us, and a lot of part of that 70%, have friends, loved ones, buddies, and so on and so forth who are incarcerated and we send money to or call. So incarceration is a big part of the black community, whether you are directly or indirectly impacted by somebody who's been arrested. So this is something that's a big issue in our community. And being able to find ways to deal with this is unbelievable. What can we ask earlier? Is there anybody, any advocate, is there any congresspeople, anybody in state legislature, anybody's doing anything to roll back this unjust fees that's being placed on people incarcerated when they come out?
The good news is that after this story came out, there are state legislators that said, I didn't even know we had these fees. We need to revisit this. So in the state of New Mexico, for example, I talked to one, Mo Maestas. He's a Democratic state senator here who is, he's a lawyer on his day job, but he's an advocate for these things in criminal justice reform. He said, look, I thought I got all these fees. I recently rescinded some of these fees. And you woke me up. Now, when the legislation comes in session next year, I'm going to be looking at this.
Yes. Gwen Nikichi, you there?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm here. I mean, it's just flabbergasting. I mean, when one is convicted of an offense, there are so many consequences, what they call collateral consequences, to a criminal conviction. And there are probably even more that we have not even uncovered. So it's important that the organizations such as Mr. Contreras that are out there on the front lines uncovering some of this information and this evidence. We're in a challenging political environment for change to be able to be made, but we absolutely must be vigilant. So I appreciate the work that he's doing and so many others as well, including you, Roach Brown. I mean, you're the one lifting the light on bringing people in to talk about all of these things. And, you know, that's why it's so very critical that Crossroads stay on the air. So back to you, Roach.
Right. You're right, Nikichi, because, folks, we bring topics that folks don't even think about or even interested in. And as a 50-year-old person been involved in criminal justice, I knew that they were charging fees, but I had no idea it was on this scale or this magnitude. And 43 states that's doing it. Other states are doing it, as well as D.C. And I never heard anything in D.C. about the fees as being charged to D.C. residents who are sent to the federal system. And even though they're state prisoners or local prisoners, they go into the state system. And in the federal system, you have to pay for sick call. You have to pay for your medication. You have to pay for several things. I know somebody sent me $100 once, and I had a restitution, and they took the entire $100, and I had no money to buy soap, toothpaste. They don't even care. If you got money in your account, they're going to take it all out, whatever you're 30, 40, 50,000. You got guys who ain't never seen $5,000 in their life. They wouldn't rob the store, 7-Eleven, and they get 15 years, and they do 10, and they come out, and they owe $30,000. They never saw $1,000 in their life. And now you owe more money than you ever even seen. And not only that, they penalize you. You can go back to prison, and they pass a law that there's no debt of prisons. This is a direct slap in the face. But that particular law, that a debt of prison, you can't go to prison because you're broke or whatever, but you came out of prison, you can't pay, and they send you back to prison because you can't pay. You went to prison because you didn't have no money to try to take somebody. So when does this cycle end? I mean, what the hell is going on? I mean, it's, Russell, I don't know what this to say, man. I mean, I've been dealing this work for about 50 years, and this is something that got me stymied, man. I don't know what to say or do about this particular piece.
And the other thing one to keep in mind is it really depends on where you live in the country, on what felonies you might face. For example, if you are in the state of New Mexico, if you steal anything above $500, then that's a felony. In Texas, it's $2,500. So every state is different. So it really depends on where you live. If you steal like an iPhone in, say, New Vermont, that could be a felony case if it's over 900 bucks, right? But if you live in Wisconsin, the felony is 2,500. So it takes a long time. If you still have an iPhone in Wisconsin, that's just a small misdemeanor. You're not going to worry about it. But if you are in, say, South Carolina, it's $2,000. In Florida, it's $750. So you are going to be judged on your locale. And usually you're in that state by no fault of your own. You were born there. Most people don't leave unless you're part of the migration, right? So it really depends on your birth and the particular laws, and then the state fees. It all depends. It's all regional. And there are very few advocates when, you know, election time comes. Very few times do incarcerated people, but very few times does the issue of poverty make it into a presidential campaign, a Senate race, a run for the House. Mm. People look down on poverty. We're ashamed of them, right?
Yes, and
we are not celebrating the burdens that they carry, right? Because that's reflective of us. It forces you to do something about it. Everybody's worried about their own situation. I'm going from paycheck to paycheck. Inflation's getting me. I can't buy my Jordans like I used to. This is an injustice. Well, if you look at folks, say I'm here in New Mexico, it's not so much Black folks getting arrested here because we don't have many, although disproportionately there are Black folks in New Mexico's prison systems. It's Native Americans. I've been to the Navajo Nation, and there's a lot of parts of the Navajo Nation that where residents do not have electricity nor plumbing. If they get an uncle or father in the criminal justice system and they run up debt, how can they pay that when their own house does not have electricity or plumbing?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a question, a debate that we have not wanted to have in this country, and it's something that probably needs to be addressed.
Well, this is, I think, one of the underlying causes of this criminal justice system, man, in terms of people committing these crimes. And it hurts when you sit there and they send $50 billion to Ukraine, $48 billion in New York City for a migrant relocation, and you got folks with nothing to eat and starving. And I read where they said that if a returning citizen's name is on a document or a joint held assets, they can seize anything that your name is on, even though you're just listed as a beneficiary, as a jointly held account. So once you get locked up, you will never, ever can get out of this hole. It's like a widening hole. You're talking about, we in D.C., and this is the first I've heard of the depth of this kind of punishment and penalization. And being poor is rough. They catch all the hell. Now they're talking about alligator Alcatraz. And you're sending folks, what the hell can we do, Russell? I mean, you've been dealing with this. I can tell from your questions and statements, you're very knowledgeable about this field. You've been dealing with it for some time. Are you a returning citizen? Have you been incarcerated?
No, sir. I've never have. Although I will say at 16, I was thrown in juvenile detention for a night because I had gone to a wrong party in Houston, Texas, sent by one of my let's just say, less than scrupulous cousin, said, you'll have a good time here. Well, I did until the police came. And I'll never forget. This was 1990. I was dressed. I'm glad that many of y'all are my age. I was dressed like MC Hammer. He was the man at the time. So I had long rayon pants in an area of cholos. These are Mexican-American gang members, right? They saw that I was out of place, but nonetheless, they thought I was a gang member. And one of the things I always remember is while they're taking photos, because they're trying to get as much evidence about gang members, while they're taking my photo, they asked me, what kind of signs do you guys throw? And I didn't know what he was talking about. He's like, what kind of gang signs you're throwing? Mm-hmm. And what he wanted me is throw the sign and then take my picture real quick.
Yeah.
And I never forgot that. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking. I really didn't know what he's talking about. If I did throw a sign, it's what I had learned on in the movies, like Colors. I would have been mimicking them. And had I thrown that, they would use it evidence. Oh, there's a gang member right there. And I knew in my little mind as a junior in high school that this was the game. This is what they were doing. And I wasn't going to play it. I just said, sir, I don't know what I was very respectful. I said, sir, I don't know what you're talking about. And he presses, oh, come on, don't be like that. I go, sir, I don't know. I'm dressed like MC Hammer. Obviously, I'm not a gang member, right? And I'll never forget that, because at that moment, my life could have turned in a different direction.
That's right. It would have turned 360.
You're ready for another pitch.
Yeah, come on, Mayuki. We're having our pitch partner, Mayuki Wimp. I like the way you pronounce her name. I pronounce her name, Mayuki. Come on, Mayuki. Do we have any phone calls on the line, Rob? Come on, Mayuki.
I'm here. You can't hear me?
A little bit louder. A little bit louder.
I can't. Is this better? Hello?
Okay, we're good. Keep going. Keep it rolling.
Okay. Yeah, because we want to get back to hear Russell Contreras' more stories about his misspent youth as an MC Hammer. But meanwhile, 202-588-9739, we want to thank Anonymous in Garden Ridge, Texas. Thank you for sharing, shining a light on so many issues that I'm totally unaware of. That there are fees in prison? What? With question marks. And I feel the same way. I'm sure many other people listening feel the same way. Marsha L. from Washington, D.C., from Thomas and Hassani, keep up the important programming. Thank you so much. They both went to the web and made pledges of support to WPFW. You can do the same. This is an intriguing show. This is an informative show. The notion that these people make 50 cents an hour and then have to pay $4 after a week's worth of work just to see a doctor, it's not fair. It is not justice. It is not a way to find redemption or rehabilitate somebody. But you get this information not from mainstream media, but from Roach Brown, from Mertine Brown, and from Nikiki. So please, if you're out there and you're listening, we've got now 14 minutes left in this first hour. We've gotten halfway. We just need another $250. One person making a pledge, a sustaining pledge of $20 a month will get us there, and we can get the other $10. 202-588-9739-1-800-222-9739, or go to the web, as the others have done, and make a pledge of support for Crossroads and WPFW. Please don't delay. You know how important this information is. I'll never forget when COVID first hit. It was Roach Brown who first talked about saying what people in crowds get the disease. This is going to be a problem in prison. No one talked about that.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
So can I ask another question to our guest, Roach? So are you in touch with some of the formerly incarcerated organizations, the national ones or the local ones? All of Us Are None, Just Leadership USA, the National Council for Incarcerated and Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls, and numerous here in this area in DC. I'm just curious, is your organization in coordination or collaboration with some of them? Most of them have been people who have the lived experience and are living the truth of what you're talking about right now.
Well, as a reporter at Axios, I have been in situations where I've been in workshops and I've done interviews from those who've been formerly incarcerated. About a few years ago, I went to Los Angeles at a program to talk about restorative justice for those who are incarcerated. The one thing that I learned is that when you are incarcerated, you're a wounded individual. You're wounded physically and you're wounded mentally, right? You've got a lot on your shoulders. And what I always find out in every case, the people who are coming out who are incarcerated and they start talking to you, they then will, when they talk about their lives, they will admit to you that they were abused at some point in their lives as youth. Mm-hmm. They're still dealing with that. So that is a big thing. But there's also other debt they're dealing with that you cannot see, that cannot be numerated. And that is the debt of pain that they are facing. So they are going through multiple things before they get that bill. Yes, they're concerned, but they've got other things on their mind that they're trying to deal with. And I remember talking to one woman who said, "I'm still dealing with the abuse that I faced as a 5-year-old. And ever since then, I'm now 30 years old or 32, whatever she was." She's like, "I'm still there and I'm dealing with that anger. So if you throw a bill at me, right, that's the least of my concerns right now. Right. I need to deal with this, what I'm dealing with, that it put me in this situation to hurt other people and hurt myself. And once I do that and I can celebrate it, then I can look at this bill and then I have to tackle this. And that's going to create more stress. So we have to keep that in mind."
And Russell, it's bad enough that women have to buy their sanitary napkins. It's insanity. You're paying to be in prison, and you're being victimized over. The punishment is being away from your family.
Yes,
that's the punishment, and then all this other stuff is heaped on. What can we do? That's the question I'm always asking. What can we do?
Well, I would be reminded, you know, this is a question that keeps coming up in Campaign Zero. What they'll say is, we want to educate people that these fees are existing. Like we're talking on the show, many people are just shocked that these fees are going. You got to get that out. The second is, I want to remind everybody of Dr. King's last campaign. Right? We all remember him, and I think the country likes to celebrate him with the I Have a Dream speech, right? And a lot of people will take that moment and lock him in time. But he had other things going on, the anti-Vietnam War crusade, and then his last crusade, the Poor People's Campaign. He was putting himself in position and urging other civil rights leaders to get in an uncomfortable situation. Go to the poor, right? Do like Jesus did, and go to the areas that need counseling, that need your help. And while he was organizing the Poor People's Campaign, he goes to Memphis for sanitation workers, and he's ultimately killed there. That's where he dies. He decides, I'm going to go where the struggle is. I'm going to go to the margins. And in doing so, Dr. King put himself in position to get educated. One of the things I thought fascinating is, I was talking to some historians, as he was organizing multiracial people for this Poor People's Campaign, and he was learning about Latinos, one aide had to tell him when he was talking to, say, a Mexican-American, he was confusing him with Puerto Ricans. And someone would say, Dr. King, that's someone from the islands. No, you're talking to someone from New Mexico. He, even though he was confused as someone who grew up in a middle-class life in Atlanta, he was willing to put himself in an uncomfortable position to learn uncomfortable truths. And he was learning about poor Apaches. He put in himself position so that when issues like this, fees, would come up, he would be able to relate them and celebrate himself with the margins. As a society, we have not done that. We only think about ourselves. We only think about our local communities. If you're in D.C., you got your own problems. You don't want to think about those in Jackson, Mississippi.
Let me cut in. We got 2 minutes, Russell. Can you let our listeners know if there's someone on the national scene who's dealing with this particular issue about these debts that are being levied against Black women? If somebody wanted to follow this up and really get involved with this, who would they call, or what organization did you suggest that these folks plug into to see what they can do to fight this particular issue? Because this is like Keisha said, the collateral consequences. There's over 44,000 things, collateral consequences, that you encounter when you come out of prison or when you get arrested. 44,000! So what is it, or who is it that they can contact or communicate with if they want to get involved in this particular issue to try to rectify it?
Well, Campaign Zero has started a website called InPayToStay, InPayToStay.org. You can go on there, learn about more stories, the individual people, learn about how the fees operate, and they also have a link where you can donate. What's interesting, they also have a link of stories.
How do you spell in? I-N or just in? How do you spell
in? E-N-D, like in, like start, end, in, pay to stay, inpaytostay.org.
Pay to stay, okay. Yeah. We want to thank you. Our time is running out, and for people who are still listening, we still need your support and help, because WPFW, you get the truth. We don't give no joogie boogie. We try to give it the same thing, and with all the cuts coming down to National Public Radio and all these other federal agencies that are being cussed, hey, we need to make sure we keep WPFW on the air and alive, because we are unfiltered. We come to you with the truth as we know it from our experiences. So thank you, Russell, for joining us. We will be having you back, brother, because you shed a lot of light on a topic that very few people are aware of, that we need to get on top of. And for next week, I mean, stay tuned for the next hour. We have Miss Virginia Ali and Vita from Ben's Chili Bowl. We're coming to you live from Ben's Chili Bowl on 10-01 H Street Northeast. Stay tuned for the next 1 hour of Crossroads with Ben's Chili Bowl. We'll see you shortly. Thanks a lot, Russell Contreras. And you want to give a name or a number they can contact you at, please?
Yes, I'm at russell.contreras@axios.com. email me, text me anytime there. I'll respond there. Great to see y'all. I look forward to seeing y'all, Benz, when I'm back in D.C.
Look us up when you get in. And a half smoke is on us. Thanks a lot for us. Russell, we're
appreciate
it. Thank
and
you.
Folks, I was going to say, folks, before we go, we still need $250 in order to make goals. So please call 202-588-9739 to support this great type of journalism and information.
Thank you. Thank you. And we need your help. So pull that money out of them old shoes under the bed, man. Y'all got the money. We ain't asking for a lot of money. Just to keep us on the air to bring you news that you can use. Thank you for tuning in to Crossroads. We'll see you shortly in the next hour, live from Ben Shilly Bowl. Remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas.
Come on.
I love you, Lord, for your mercy never fails me. All my days I've been held in your hand. From the moment that I wake up until I lay my head, oh, I will sing of the goodness of God. 'Cause all my life you have been faithful. So, so good. With every breath that I am able, oh, I will sing of the goodness of God. I love your voice. You have led me through the fire in darkest night. You are close like no other. I've known you as a father.